we would start off with talking about protecting our minds, kind of everyday situations, kind of on retreat, but it seems nice and sheltered here, so I think we're safe. Just thinking about how much our attention gets pulled away during the day, get caught up in a lot of stuff that doesn't really have any long-term benefit for us, either spiritually or materially in the world. And I know, like, sometimes I listen to NPR in the car for 10 minutes trying to stay awake if we're driving somewhere, and 10 minutes seems to be about enough. Can't handle too much of the news and the politics and the weird stuff going on out there that doesn't really help to know about, as interesting as it might seem or important as it might seem. In a couple of days, it's just gone. Yeah, stuff we think about, huh? What's for lunch? Or what's on TV? Or do they have TV anymore? Is that still a thing? Okay. Netflix, what's on Netflix? And what interesting book can I read, like, to distract myself from the boredom? Or where's my next trip going to be, fun or some kind of, you know, traveling experience or a new relationship or whatever. It's like there's so many things pulling at our attention that isn't really necessary or helpful. And yeah, it's a really good place to look at protecting our minds from all of the sensory stimulation and the instant kind of nature of all the media out there now. You want to know something, you look at your phone and you can find out really quickly. And it just seems to be such a attention grab. And it's really important to not let that take us away from our practice. The Buddha repeatedly emphasized protecting the mind in the suttas. It's all over, and there's a whole book in the Sanyutta Nikaya mostly dedicated to that, so it's a big deal. And usually when we think about it, the first thing that comes to mind is guarding our six senses, our six sense doors. And it's like, I don't know, images, even just seeing ads on a billboard or something, like displaying some kind of sensuality or something we're meant to see as beautiful, or even things that are like in the news that, or movies that are like violent or describing injustice, and just seeing through them and how much they like stir the mind up with craving and anger and resentment and a lot of delusion. Just being mindful to try to shut that down for ourselves so we can focus on the important things. And then some of this stuff, like allowing a little bit of it in, the mind can tend to ruminate on it and repeat over and over that story or that injustice or whatever it is that really sticks in the mind, and it deepens our grooves towards more resentment or delusion or anger. So it's a good cutoff point just to sort of watch our not just what we see and watch, but also like our cravings for food or nice smelling things, perfume, or again, food. just kind of like it's true for all of the senses. And it's like the most basic form for protecting our minds. And another form comes through mostly through our relationships with other people. We hear so much about Kalyanamitta as like an essential support for our practice. And it's true for the people we work with too, and certain family members who, you know, might kind of be difficult or not doing the most wholesome things, maybe. And so we can choose to spend either less time with certain people in our families, or try to turn it towards wholesome topics when we're talking with them. And if you're in a work environment that's toxic, it's good to just quit. Go find something more wholesome, because it really does have a big impact on our minds. So many people come home and they're just thinking about the things that happen at work with people. And maybe it's not very much to do with the work at all, but the kind of people, you know, who are hanging around. Like we had a contractor that we liked a lot who was helping build the downstairs up, our laundry and bathroom. And he was really great. And we really appreciated his kind of engineering ingenuity. He basically shored up the house on almost nothing and put in a foundation and did a great job. And he was very kind and generous and kind of jokey, sweet, nice guy. And then he started drinking alcohol again. He had an alcohol addiction, and he kind of fell off the wagon and started smoking and drinking a lot, not on the job, but we could smell things on him sometimes, and his character really changed. And then he had, he hired a couple of people that also seemed pretty unwholesome. And so we decided we were just not gonna work with him anymore, because we want the monastery environment to be more wholesome. So stuff like that happens. In the Anguttara Nikaya, number 1061, there's a sutta called Ignorance. And I really like this one because it's kind of sweet in a way. It drives home the point of having good people around you, but it's a simile about how things add up, like drops of water on a mountaintop, kind of like here, right now. Filling up the little streams and the rivulets, and those go into little ponds, and those fill up little lakes, and the lakes go to rivers, and the rivers go out to the ocean. And it's that kind of, the word they translate this as is nutriment. So it kind of feeds, one condition kind of feeds the next condition, and it causes it like the next cause, and it has another condition to feed another cause. And it starts with the Buddha's talking to this Brahmin named Janusani, and he's kind of he has a strong sense of self, this one, and they're talking about things not really having causes or conditions for ignorance or for liberation. And the Buddha is saying, not associating with good people is the nutriment, or it feeds the not having the opportunity to hear the good Dhamma. And in turn, that feeds a lack of faith or confidence in a Dhamma. And that feeds your careless attention. And that feeds a lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension. And that feeds non-restraint of the sense faculties. And that in turn feeds misconduct of body, speech, and mind. And that in turn feeds the five hindrances, which ultimately feeds ignorance. So it all starts with hanging out with the wrong kinds of people. And it does say associating. So to me, it's not just your friends. It is your coworkers and your family members who might need some help in becoming more wholesome, or you might have to change your situation. And then the inverse side of that is kind of nice, kind of conversa. So you associate with good friends and good people, and it leads to hearing the good Dhamma and the confidence or faith in the Dhamma, and the careful attention and the mindfulness and clear comprehension, and then restraint of the sense faculties, good conduct of body, speech, and mind, and the four establishments of mindfulness, and the seven factors of enlightenment, and the true knowledge and liberation. Yeah, I just like it. It's just the nice seeds of it. It all starts with good people, having good people around. And then the last kind of, maybe not the last one, but another important part is having really good sila to help you protect your mind. And a sutta I like from that one is the Fear and Dread Sutta. It's Majjhima Nikaya number 4. And the Buddha is talking to, I believe, it's the same sect.
Yeah,
the same problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. John Muslim. And it's kind of nice the Buddha is talking about, he eventually gets to talking about his enlightenment story. And this Brahmin is saying, like, aren't you scared to go hang out in the jungle by yourself with all the critters and the bugs and the things that want to eat you? And he's like, well. And he starts off with saying, I think I might just read this because it probably won't summarize it very well. So it says, the Buddha's talking here, and it says, I considered thus. When recklesses or Brahmins, unpurified in bodily conduct, resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, then owing to the defect of their unpurified bodily conduct, these good recluses and Brahmins invoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, unpurified in bodily conduct. I am purified in bodily conduct. I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with bodily conduct purified. Seeing in myself this purity of bodily conduct, I found great solace in dwelling in that forest. I considered thus, when recklesses or Brahmins, unpurified in verbal conduct, unpurified in mental conduct, unpurified in livelihood, resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, they invoke unwholesome fear and dread, but I am purified in livelihood. So he's talking about the same kind of thing, verbal, mental, and verbal, mental, and livelihood are purified. Seeing this myself, in myself, this purity of livelihood, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. So it's just like making sure your sila is good, you're going to be okay. Your mind can be protected with the knowledge that you don't have anything to fear, because whatever happens, you know that the good karma you've made is going to have consequences somewhere down the line. So that's another form of good protection for your mind. So we've got like the good sense restraint and good people around us, and as much sila as we can muster, and that's a good Teflon package for your defilements to kind of block them. It's like the best rebirth control ever. Protect yourself. Oh, there's clapping. I'm not sure this is the right impression I meant. Yeah, so, and obviously just protecting your mind isn't enough to make the kind of progress we need to make. We have to empower it too. And I really like this Dhammapada verse that probably everybody here has heard at some point. My paraphrasing of it is not as beautiful, sorry. But it's verse 183 in the Dhammapada, and it's basically, the first line is stop doing bad things, and the second one is do good things, and the third one is purify the mind. So we have that the protecting the mind is kind of like keeping the bad stuff out, and empowering the mind is bringing the good stuff in, and both of them will help to satisfy the third one of purifying the mind. So, I don't know, that's a good, like, almost a mantra you can use during the day to sort of keep your mind on something wholesome. I just kind of like it. We're all different, so I kind of come up with my own little methods of trying to help myself learn more and apply it throughout the day, apply the Buddhist teachings throughout the day. And I think a lot of you stayed with us at this clinic. You've been to the monastery, so you all probably know about my favorite game, Where's the Clinging? Yeah, so you know. Yeah, so. Yeah, just using what you, using whatever you can to help yourself. Like when I'm grumpy or frustrated and I'm trying to figure out what's really wrong so that I can see what's underneath the feelings and what I need to do to help brighten my mind. And just having the idea of like, I'm going to play a game. Where's the clue? That helps. And sometimes it's hard to know what the mind needs. So yeah, when we kind of investigate for ourselves, it kind of sticks better than someone just telling you what to do. So really digging in there and seeing what works for yourself can be pretty effective, I find. Another game I like to play is Nothing Wrong. I see that a lot too. So same kind of thing, if I'm kind of irritated by something that's gone not the way I wanted it to, something falls apart at the Hermitage, or you know, some small mistake or misfortune happens with either myself or anybody else, it's like, oh, it's wrong, it's okay. And the repetition of that helps to build up the perception for when something really is wrong, that like, this is just samsara. Things are gonna fall apart anyway. It's just the nature of how this is, and to not get bogged down by it. So, yeah, I mean, the Buddha was pretty good at talking about the same Dhamma topic in different ways to different people, and making it applicable for their situation when they needed it. So I think that's pretty good encouragement for us to do that for ourselves. And I mean, you know, we got two very willing participants here to give you free advice that you may find useful. So please do just ask if you have questions about your own practice. Let's see. Hey, I used up all my suttas. But I don't know, sometimes picking a Dhamma theme to use throughout the day is a good method to help. I like the Brahma Viharas are good, the four establishments of mindfulness are good, maybe an enlightenment factor or something to chew on throughout the day that will keep your mind kind of guarded a little bit, and kept on the wholesome things is nice. And also like it's a more active focus for you. If you're finding mindfulness kind of blurry or boring, then you can pick a Dhamma theme that you want throughout the day. And you can't really go wrong as long as the methods you find that help yourself are kind of like infused with the right view and the right intention, and wholesome and beneficial results happen from them. Things that will really help transform your mind. So examining like what happens when we do this practice, if you're gonna play with the enlightenment factors or something, or your favorite Brahma Vihara, like fit the Brahma Vihara to your situation, like you're going along and something good happens to someone at work or whatever, and you're happy for them and excited for them. Even if you're not, you can fake it till you make it. And you know, just picking something and seeing what kind of effect that has on your mind in the long term and the short term. And maybe that doesn't really work for you, and maybe it doesn't help your suffering decrease, you kind of just find yourself irritated. And then it's probably time to pick a new topic to work with. So really just kind of playing around with things, seeing what is going to work for your mind, knowing yourself enough, being aware enough of how you're feeling underneath. Yeah. I don't think I really have that much, not much more to say.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.